When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. I'm Jared Kimber, and today we're going to be talking about arguably one of India's greatest ever captains and greatest ever players.
Short pulled by Dhoni all the way.
A man who has led his country to three major trophies in three different competitions and who mastered the art of the run chase with over 10,000 ODI runs.
Peggy Bowles here to Dhoni. He goes again over long on, two in a row. Here we go.
Over the next hour, myself and Steve Harmson will be joined by a former Rajasthan Royals batsman and the author of his biography as we pay tribute to an incredible career of Mahendra Singh Dhoni.
Anderson goes to Dhoni. That's called cricket. Oh, that is big for an MS Dhoni. Dhoni goes straight over his head. Oh, that's into the second deck. Goes long over mid-wicket. He ends it in one ball. The South India Derby finished with one massive blow for MS Dhoni.
So one of India's greatest ever captains, MS Dhoni, has announced his retirement from international cricket. The 39-year-old is the country's most successful leader at international level, having won two World Cups and a Champions Trophy. He scored over 17,000 international runs and leaves a legacy as great as anyone to wear the blue colours of India. Alongside me today is a man who played against him, former England bowler Steve Harmison. Harmy, what is your reaction to Dhoni giving up his international career?
Yeah, it's a one of not surprise because of the numbers you mentioned, tells you he's played a long time, but one of great admiration. Absolute great admiration. I think he's been a great ambassador for the game of cricket. I think he's been a fantastic leader, arguably the best white ball leader of any cricket nation, and a fantastic leader for India, and somebody who not played the most conventional way, i.e. stereotypical batsman who stands there, immaculate forward defence, and when it comes to him with the wicket-keeping and he's not bothered, so it looks as though he's not bothered sometimes to bend down and pick it up, and he just stops at his pads. All this that goes with Mahendra Singh Dhoni, as well as the helicopter shots and the amazing finishes to games that guy has been involved in. It's one of a huge admiration and a massive congratulations on what has been a fantastic international career.
I find MS Dhoni such a fascinating character. So here's one for you, Harmy. He plays a lot of online role-playing games. So, I don't know the names of them, but, World of Warcraft, those sorts of games. And at one stage, he worked out that every time he was playing for India, someone was like attacking his areas. And so he literally went and hired someone to play the game for him while he was playing for India. But what he did was, he told the person not to attack, but just to defend, just to maintain. He didn't want an advantage from this other guy who was obviously a really good player, a professional player. That's the kind of way that he thinks. And there's also a great story about the way he learnt to wicket keep. So he basically learnt to wicket keep with a coach who would sit him in front of the coach's motorbike. And the coach said, "My motorbike's behind you. If you miss a single ball here, you're in all sorts of trouble." And so if you look at Dhoni's wicket-keeping technique, it's all about him getting his pads and his body in the way, in a way that most wicket-keepers in the world don't do at all. he's almost completely a self-made person from that sort of perspective. But you must have played against him, Harmy.
Yeah, I played against him a few times. And again, you look at him and just think, is he awake in there? But sometimes you don't want to tap him on the head and think, and say, come on, MS, wake up. Because when he did wake up, some cricketer. And I think it's been fascinating listening to people that knew him, people that played alongside him. And there was a couple of times where I remember one game. I can't remember where it was at. I'm not sure if it was Mahali, the test match. He was batting with a tail. I'm not sure. I don't think it was Mahali, but he was definitely batting with a tail. And I think Freddie was captain. I might have been Ahmedabad when I came off. Yeah, I think it was Ahmedabad. And I bowled a ball, and he hit it for six. So I thought, right, I'm going to get him a slower ball. And the old Michael Clarke, conventional average slower ball I had, and he hit that one for six. And I thought, well, he's not going to pick it twice in a row, is he? And he hit that one even further. Freddie's shouting at me, will you just hit the pitch? And I was like, I think I can get the slower ball. I don't think he's picking a slower ball. And I think in accumulation of yardage, I think he hit my slower ball in three balls, about 400 yards. But he was just that sort of, that sort of character. And that them three sixes he hit, or the destructive manner he went into. He went from first gear to fifth gear in no time at all. And you say about his wicket keeping. I think I read he was a very, very good footballer. He was a goalkeeper as he grew up, and his football coach pushed him into cricket and into wicket keeping. And I just think he was refreshing because he wasn't this sort of stereotypical Indian who had been brought up through the schooling system and scored millions of runs, and he was going to be a child superstar. He is, like you mentioned, a self-made cricketer who was a little bit unorthodox, but you knew when he was in the ground. I remember a one-day game, and they're singing Dhoni, 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 like that. And Matt Pryor was at 45 in a one-day game, and Matt Pryor's me being my usual self, going wandering, thinking who's in the crowd and everything. And Matty Pryor's trying to get me to move sort of 5 yards, and I'm only, 30 yards away from him, and I can't hear a word he's saying. And it was deafening, the noise when he came out to bat. And he was somebody a bit like Sachin, a bit like what Virat is now. He's somebody that, there's always this poster boy, and he didn't disappoint. He didn't disappoint. He was somebody who was like we've mentioned, he was somebody who was destructive with a bat, unorthodox, but very, very good with the keeping gloves, and a ridiculously exceptional leader of men when it comes to both test red and white ball.
It's interesting when you talk about the red and white ball. I mean, his record as a wicketkeeper batsman still stands up. It's not a bad record, but because of what he managed to do, especially in one day cricket, but then also T20 cricket, his test cricket is almost overshadowed a little bit.
Yeah, but when you look at his numbers, he averages 38 with the bat in test match cricket. There's quite a few England top six would like to average 38 at the minute. And
as a wicketkeeper, it's still going to be in one of the best averages of all time. It's just that I think we thought he could even do more, isn't it? It's unfair to his test batting. I thought he was a really good test batsman.
Yeah, he was. But I just thought he was a very, very good calculated cricketer, somebody who weighed up the options. He can see he was a deep thinker by you mentioned before, the war games, the role play he puts himself in. He always was sort of challenging himself behind a little bit like Vaughan, behind the glasses, behind the mask. There was this deep thinker there, and he played the situation brilliantly. I mentioned before, the three sixes playing, hitting with the tail, or whether he came in and had to fight for his life and just battle and see his team through a passage of play and a period of play. And he was, you talk about the leadership. You captain India at anything, or you be involved in the Indian management, you can't emphasize enough how intense that country is when it comes to playing sport and representing their country. And, the closest thing, and from a footballing terms, it's about 10% level of intensity of managing Barcelona or Real Madrid. You have one bad game, half a season, and you're sacked, you're gone. This is Yeah, you times that by about 20, and then you can get somewhere close to being, or not even close to being, what Mahendra Singh Dhoni has been over the course of his career as a captain. But the lifestyle of the likes of Sachin and what Virat's leading now, there is a massive riches when it comes to financial gain. But the sacrifices you have to have and the way you have to live your life is arguably a bit like royalty. And that is probably the biggest, you know, the sort of biggest thing I could say about them, because, you know, I wouldn't like that level of scrutiny. I wouldn't like to be in the position they were in for any level of money, because I would imagine it being a very, very tough place sometimes, rewarding, but very, very tough. And I think for MS to have that leadership for so long is testament that not only the person, no, sorry, the cricketer, but how good the person was.
As a white ball player, I mean, you almost straddled the two eras of, you know, what the sort of player that Michael Bevan was, and, you know, go through to MS Dhoni. I mean, Dhoni took a lot of sort of inspiration from Michael Bevan of taking the innings as far as he could and as deep as he could, keep, you know, not worrying too much about the runway, knowing that if you keep it to the end, you can have a go. But what Dhoni added to that was this incredible power, and especially, you know, through the helicopter shot, the ability to hit sixes off balls that were previously basically Yorkers, and then suddenly if you miss your Yorker by a couple of inches to MS Dhoni, somehow managed to get underneath it and put, you know, hit it over long on about 30 rows back.
He did, and but like what you're saying there, Jared, it wasn't like the norm, because when MS came into international cricket, it was widely regarded that if your wicketkeeper could bat, he opened a bat. He came in as an opening batter. Adam Gilchrist did it. We tried it with Garan Jones and Matty Pryor, and, you know, all these wicketkeeper batsmen were around. The batsmen then who batted seven in a test match would go in first in a one day international. But MS never really got to that level. He always sort of came in lower down. Yes, calculated how good he was. But as he was getting better at it, there was also a level, not only the expectancy on him doing it because from his teammates, but there was also a sort of, you'll stand there in the field and you're thinking, oh, he's going to go here. And more often than not, he did it. And you overcomplicated it, second-guessed it, because you felt as though you had to do something different. And all he did was go on the bowler's mismanagement of the situation, their difference of thinking, right, here we go again. And I'm sure Bevan was exactly the same. Bowlers going and thinking, right, once Michael Bevan gets to 15-20, once Mahendra Singh Dhoni gets to 15-20, how are we going to get him out now? And, you know, it doesn't matter if it gets 8, 9, 10 and over, he'll still win this game for his team. And I think a lot of teams were resigned to the fact, and I think went into their shells a little bit as opposed to trying to embrace it. And I think he jumped on that fact. I think you talk about the military side of what he had. I think any level of weakness in the opposition, that's one thing that Mahendra Singh Dhoni and the likes of Michael Bevan, who were good finishers, they had jumped on that fact. And he was probably the best at that aspect of the game. 350 one-day nationals at an average of 50. That is ridiculous for somebody batting in an area where you, more often than not, coming into the game, and you've got to elevate the run scoring rate and potentially take risks on losing your wicket. For somebody to average that amount of runs, 10,000, nearly 11,000 runs in 350 matches, in that sort of pressure is phenomenal.
Regarding cricket. You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, an MS Dhoni special with myself, Jared Kimber, and Steve Harmison. Arguably India's greatest ever captain announced his international retirement at the weekend, having scored over 17,000 runs at the highest level. It's been a career full of ups and downs, and one man who knows more about it than most was the man who wrote his book. And I'm delighted that journalist and author Bharat Sundaresan joins us live from Australia on The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. Bharat, MS Dhoni is from Ranchi. Can you tell me a little bit about Ranchi?
Oh, Ranchi is a tier 2 town, and funnily, and a lot of people from Ranchi will tell you this, before MS Dhoni came along, they were actually better known for having the biggest mental asylum / hospital in the country, and which is called a Pagal Khana in Hindi, and that's really what they were known for. They're close to Jamshedpur, which is the steel capital of India, so Very industrial town. It's got a nice vibe. Like, I've been there once only for the book, where I was like treated like royalty just because I was there to write about their hero. But yeah, it's actually from some angles just any town India, like any town, any tier two town India. But it's got actually decently rich history. But of course, everything's been like overshadowed and overlapped by the Dhoni story. So wherever you go there, you'll meet someone who has some Dhoni story. His car parked here. He loved to eat samosas there. This chai is what he loved the most. And yeah, right now you can't go anywhere in Ranchi without being met by a Dhoni story.
And did players come from cities like Ranchi beforehand? Or were they mostly from the major tier one cities, if you will?
I think like a lot of time, it's like Dhoni gets credited for being the first small town hero, which I think is slightly unfair. I mean, people, even Kapil Dev didn't come from a major city or what would have been considered a major cricketing city back when he did. Of course, like, you know, the Indian cricket history till the 90s was mainly made up of guys from Bombay, Bangalore, Delhi, Chennai and Calcutta, like you said. But Dhoni actually came through at a time when a lot of guys from these little towns started sprouting up, like the tier two towns. It also kind of coincided with, you know, a lot of people in the bigger cities getting richer and sending their kids abroad and more distractions. English football came into the picture and, like, you know, ruined everything in the bigger cities. Everybody was suddenly a Manchester United, Chelsea fan, like Dhoni himself. Like, Dhoni would actually rock up for cricket matches as a kid. Not even as a kid, even for a domestic game wearing a Manchester United cap. And someone actually had to ask him to take it off and put on a cricket cap. So I think that he came around that time, like the Suresh Rainas of the world. Most of them are from the small town. And it's now just become a norm, really, because you don't see too many big city players reach the international level.
Do you think that helped him as a cricketer going forward? Because, you know, you talk about Indian cricket and it's been so intense that actually somebody coming out left field who, you know, is not obsessed by it, has got different outlooks of life and different ways of life, actually helped him to cope with the initial pressure of being, you know, the Indian cricketer and the sort of poster boy. And then as it went on through his captaincy and the way he led his country, you know, having this obsession about cricket could actually be to the detriment, but actually his other interests in his life seemed to be apparent, which I thought made him not only a better cricketer, but actually, you know, a more rounded person from the outside looking at him.
Oh, totally, Steve. I mean, you just like hit the nail on the head there, because Dhoni never lived in that bubble. Yeah, it really did help coming from a town like that. And look, I mean, yeah, he made his own destiny in a way, but there were a lot of things that went for that Dhoni story. Like, he grew up in a tiny apartment complex, but which was part of a colony, but it was right next to a first-class ground. Like, how many people in India can say that? So he, to watch a Ranji Trophy game, which, as you know, is our, like, our version of the county cricket, he just had to go to the terrace of his building and watch first-class cricket, which not many people would have had the opportunity to do. Like, I certainly didn't. Which also meant that he wasn't faced with the kind of competition you would get in a city like Bombay or Delhi, where even now to get to the under-19 team, you have, like, I know kids who score, I'm not kidding, like around 12,000, 13,000 runs in one season. That's also the amount of cricket that gets played to even make it to the junior level team. So it helped, certainly, coming from that kind of an environment. And yeah, I mean, he is, I tell people, he's the most real person I've ever met in the Indian cricket scene. Like, I'm not even talking about cricketers, even among journalists, as Jared would tell you. So he just always came with a lot of interest, like whether it was his interest in the army, which again wasn't the jingoistic, like India should beat Pakistan in every war kind of interest, but in actually being a foot soldier. And that was his greatest interest. One of the most fascinating things I heard about that love was the first time he went to an army camp solo. The first thing he did was go and stand at the sentry post, because in the army, they say that the sentry post is always given to the junior most soldier, and he has the most responsibility because at night everything seems to move, and if he has to shoot, he has to shoot. He can't wait for anyone's orders. So he would do stuff like that. So that, and like whether it was his interest in bikes, as everybody knows now, he was obsessed with it. And just generally, like his interest in the little things, like even stuff like he would never order if, for example, a little table clock in the hotel room breaks down. He would never ask for housekeeping. He would always fix it. Like, he was like one of those people, always had a safety pin with him. Like, he was always like active with his hands. And because he was like that, I think it's allowed him to be real and also not get too affected by success and failure. I mean, we talk about that a lot in sport. I'm sure, Steve, you've heard that all your life. But for him, it was a reality. Like, he believed so strongly in his own destiny that he was never fazed by failure, because it also helped that he came from a kind of family where he had to take a lot of decisions himself. I mean, he didn't come out of poverty like a lot of guys do in India, but it was a lower middle class family where his father would work and his mother was a housewife, and everything had to be, like, you know, he was the youngest, but he still had to take all the decisions for himself, which kind of you could see why he became a leader, because he was a leader all his life. And you see his international career, he captained for, I think, 70% of the games he played in.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, myself, Jared Kimber, and Steve Harmison, and we're speaking to the author of the book, The Dhoni Touch, Bharat Sundararajan. Now, Bharat, he gets talked up as this sort of magical figure, but most of the stuff he does, whether it was his batting or his captaincy, was kind of very pragmatic. He was like maybe the most pragmatic, unemotional cricketer that we've seen lead a major team in a long time. He would weigh everything up, whether it be, you know, he'd look at a batsman and go, well, we have to spin the ball away from him, or we need a left arm seamer against him, or whatever it is, and then just basically do it to the point where when they lost the 2015 World Cup game against Australia, he literally, when everyone said, why weren't you slogging? He said, we didn't have the batting to make that score.
You put it perfectly. Yeah, he understood like the strengths and weaknesses of his team better than most people. Like, people always accuse him of not having been the greatest test captain. Maybe there is some truth to it, but you look at the bowling attack he traveled with. Kohli has the luxury of Shami, who has the experience and knows how to bowl in overseas conditions. Ishan Sharma has finally come of age in the last 4 or 5 years. That's where most of his selection calls were based around guys he could just trust to do a job. Like, Jadeja and Ishan Sharma played a lot under Dhoni, Test cricket especially, because he knew that he could just order them literally to pull off whatever he wanted to do. Like, you know, the Jadeja, he would literally, I mean, you guys don't know Hindi, but it was funny. It was almost like Jadeja was like, he had a switch for Jadeja. He would ask him to pitch the ball in a certain spot, and he would do that like without fail. It was amazing watching them function. And you know what, Jared, like that's really how he's lived his life as well, in terms of for example, you know, you guys have been to India, you know, we believe a lot in like horoscopes and palmistry and all that. So the one thing he never ever does is extend his arm to a palmist, because he strongly believes that I really believe in my destiny and things are going well for me. I really don't want to know what's going to happen in the future. And it's not like he's not religious or he's an atheist for that matter. He goes to the temple like most pious Indians do. I think that pragmatism you speak about really echoes in every aspect of his life. And certainly as a cricketer, I mean, those run chases, right? His logic to take it to the end was not based on any, like you said, not magic. It was just about pretty much taking it to a spot like where it's like a Mexican standoff, right? It's like either you or me. And as the batsman, in a way, I don't have anything to lose. So, that's how he played his cricket. But because I think he closed himself up so much to the media, and just, I think that's just his nature anyway. People always wondered, like, you know, what was going through his head. Even like the famous act of giving Joginder Sharma the last over, as you know, in that World Cup final. He had actually seen Joginder Sharma pull off the Yorker many times in like local cricket, domestic cricket. And he just walked up to Joginder and his logic was, look, of everyone here, you have nothing to lose. Like, you know, you're not going to play it too long for India. This is like a great opportunity for you. Just do what you do best. And it paid off. So, most of his decisions were based on very practical, very common sense, really.
And his leadership qualities were, I thought they were ridiculous. He's up there as probably the best white ball captain that has ever been. But he seemed to, it was weird watching from actually on the field, but also from afar, that for somebody who didn't really look as though he was interested in what was going on, he didn't sort of command the ball as a captain to sort of, and he wasn't animated and around the field. The amount of level of respect he had from not only the players he played with, but also, not eventually, but very quickly in his career, the respect he had off the opposition players as well in the countries that he was going in. There seemed to be that relaxed mentality of manner, which had a very sort of nice way and a good way. And it wasn't a case of an in-your-face sort of way. That seemed to rub off and help not only his team, but his national team, but he did in his IPL as well, because very successful in the IPL, worked very closely with somebody a little bit similar when it comes to the sort of leadership, and some like Stephen Fleming, very, very quiet and, you know, seemed calculated but relaxed at what he did. And from somebody who played quite a bit against him, it just seemed as though he never really looked flustered. And that, from an Indian cricketer, is ridiculous, because I don't, you know, I can't emphasize enough to people listening at home what it's like to play cricket in India as the opposition. But I would not have, that's one nation I would not like to have played for, because it's one bad game and the world is ending.
Oh yeah, and he learned that the hard way very early on in his career in 2007, when they were knocked out of that World Cup early, when he went home, and you guys would remember their houses were stoned. They needed special security to even reach their own homes. And till then, he hadn't seen like a bad phase in his career. From the time he made his debut, the first 5 months were not too flash. But once he made that 100 against Pakistan, that 148, he hadn't, like, you know, he didn't look back. And then that was the first reality check, when he learned that it's like you said, Steve, it's not easy being an Indian cricketer, because not only do you have no privacy, it's like you're always living, you're always working towards making everybody else happy. Like, you know, you have to win so that, like, you know, I lost my job, so you better win a cricket match or I'll, like, you know, get upset. So it's a crazy environment. And unless you're Indian, you don't even get it. Like, I can't even explain it to you. So it's amazing how he carried it. But, like, you know, when you speak about him not being in your face, he always found his own ways of giving back. Like, one famous story that jumps out for me was that 2008 Benson and Hedges trophy. What was it called in 2007-8, Jared? The Australia tie series? Was it the CUB series then?
Yeah, I think it was, wasn't it?
It was a CUB series, right? So India-Australia at the MCG, they're chasing like 190. And this is when Australia were three-time World Cup champions, indomitable. Every win against them was considered an upset. And Dhoni and Rohit Sharma are in the middle, and India need like 15 runs in 10 overs or so. So he sends a message to the dressing room, says that, look, we're going to win this match. Nobody will celebrate. No show of emotion. And he calls this young Rohit Sharma to him in the middle, and he says, look, when we win, don't show any excitement in your body language. Just like literally hold your hand out like a limp handshake. When we exchange handshakes with the Australians, and just look through them, like, don't show any emotion. And his logic was, we're not going to show them that this is like the greatest day of our lives or this win matters. It's no upset. It's just us beating you in a one-dayer. And that was his way of giving it back to them. And in that same series, Matthew Hayden would, like, you know, Matthew Hayden was being Matthew Hayden, basically. And he would go after the younger members of that team, Robin Uthappa and the likes. And the story goes that once Robin Uthappa gave it back to Hayden, and Hayden finally shot back at him and saying, like, you know, who the hell do you think you are? Like, show me some respect. You know who I am. So when Dhoni heard of this, he went up to the younger guys and said, okay, he wants respect, right? We'll give him respect in our way. So apparently every time Hayden walked out to bat walked out to bat in that series, he would get all the young guys to just walk around him, just saying the word respect, 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 to get into his head. So in many ways, like you said, Steve, he was very un-Indian in his way, but also very Indian in his way. Like, he was very desi, as they call them, as they call Indian expats. In the sense, he found these very earthy Indian ways of giving it back to the opposition, and also kind of showing them that we belong at this level.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's Super Kings, go.
Anderson goes to Dhoni. That's called cricket. Oh, that is big for Ninnis Dhoni. Dhoni goes straight over his head. Oh, that's into the second deck.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, an MS Dhoni special with myself, Jared Kimber, Steve Harmison, and the author of MS Dhoni's biography, Bharat Sundaresan. Now, Bharat, Chennai Super Kings, they got suspended for basically being involved in corruption and match fixing during Dhoni's time. I don't think there is any franchise in the history of cricket that is more intertwined with its main star than Chennai Super Kings. How much will that tarnish him that they were involved in corruption while he was there?
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to leave him, because for all the fans he has or all the love he gets in India, there'll always be detractors. Like, you know, I get it all the time. Like, whenever I write a piece on him, or even after the book, I was always like, yeah, but you didn't write about the fixing, no? So it's just, it's never going to leave him in a sense. And I think he personally didn't handle it too well. I thought right after the 2013 scandal, when there was a press conference, I remember being there in Bombay before they left for the Champions Trophy in England, he was asked a lot of questions about it. And rather than say no comment or I don't want to talk about it, he just sat there strangely not saying anything, like just smiling. And I don't think he, of course, I mean, it was a huge burden on his shoulders, because it was like he was like the kingpin of the whole operation, is what it was played out like. A lot of conjecture about his involvement. Well, like, you know, so far there is no evidence against him or like him even knowing about it, but there is this thing I heard about him when he went to England in 2013, and like, you know, a couple of his close friends were on that tour, and they didn't know how to, like, you know, approach him. They didn't know what was going through his head, and apparently they walked up to him and he was just very normal, and he smiled and he hugged them, and they were like, dude, like, isn't there like some crazy issue happening with you back home? Like, how are you so cool? And he apparently just told them, well, I've not done anything wrong. My conscience is clear, so I don't need to be upset with anything. And similarly, in that final itself, 2013 final, we keep talking about he did it in his own strange ways. So when the team got into the huddle, and like, of course, all these guys were like nervous. They were in almost like some sort of a lockdown because of their team being in that turmoil. Apparently, he just looked around and he just told them, guys, we are number two. And this was his way of like calming the situation down. He said, we are number two on the Fair Play Awards. By the end of the night, I want us to go to number one, regardless of whether we win this final or not. Like, so, and they I've spoken to players in that team. They apparently looked around saying, like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, you know, like, all eyes are on us. We are playing in an IPL final when, like, our team has been, like, you know, everybody's questioning our integrity. And he's talking about the Fair Play Award. So it was just his way of, I guess, like, calming the situation down. But, yeah, I think it's something that he'll have to live with. But, like, the fact that Chennai Super Kings came back and won in 2018, and like, you know, and he's going to continue with Chennai Super Kings for a while. Like, Srinivasan was on record, your old friend Srinivasan, Jared, was on record a couple of days ago saying, I'll get him to play for us as long as he wants to. And I even link the timing of his retirement. There's been so much of talk about why he did it, the way he did it, and all that. But it's, again, like, I'm not surprised. He used Instagram to announce the return of Chennai Super Kings in 2017. Like, the day their suspension ended, he just posted a picture of himself with the Chennai Super Kings jersey with the number 7 and with his dog strangely, like, saluting him. And with no caption, like, you know, no caption required. So he's always used Instagram. He knows Instagram is way bigger than Twitter. Like, his finger's always on the pulse of where the world is going. He was the first to get onto Twitter. And similarly, like, you know, right now with the World T20 World Cup postponed by a year, like, what better time, and with the IPL confirmed, what better time to raise the CSK brand than to announce your retirement and literally tell the world, okay, if you want to see MS Dhoni, he'll be only in yellow. I think it's a perfectly timed retirement in terms of raising the brand of CSK if they needed it.
And you talk about the sort of brand Dhoni and the person that Dhoni is, but there's people that he's worked with. I work with one, and I must admit, from a journalist's point of view, it must have been a nightmare working with the Indian cricket team while Duncan Fletcher was coach, because, you know, Dhoni didn't say much. Duncan says even less. But people like Duncan Fletcher and Gary Kirsten, Stephen Fleming especially, you know, very sort of quiet characters, very, I'd say, laid back guys, but very deep thinkers. I know Duncan how he works. And that seems to have rubbed off on Dhoni's leadership as well, because he wasn't somebody, like I said before, he wasn't a shouter, a ranter, a raver, and he wasn't in your face. But he was somebody that thought heavily. How sort of close did he work with these coaches and, you know, respect and listen to them?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up Duncan Fletcher. I have a little Duncan Fletcher story for you. Like, so his first assignment with India was, official assignment was the 2011 tour of the West Indies. And I remember being there, and there were only like 4 or 5 Indian journalists, because not many generally had traveled to the Caribbean. And right after that, they were directly going to England for the 2011 tour. And I remember Duncan used to be at the lobby at the hotel bar with Trevor Penny and Eric Simmons, like, you know, chilling with the team. And towards the end of that series, I remember walking up to him and saying, like, sorry, Mr. Fletcher, you don't know me, but if you think this is what it is like to be the coach of India, you're going to be in for a rude shock when you go to England, where there are like 50 people just breathing down your neck, checking every drop that you drink. So, I think, and then Eric Simmons told him, yeah, he's right, Duncan. So, surprisingly, I think Dhoni worked beautifully with Duncan Fletcher in particular. And there were even stories when he, like, you know, randomly announced his test retirement in 2014. I remember doing a story where one of the things that had affected Dhoni, or he wasn't too happy about in that setup, like, was when, like, you know, Ravi Shastri had become team director and Virat Kohli had captained that famous first test at Adelaide. And when Dhoni was, either injured or was, like, I don't know what it was. He missed the first test. And when he came in, and apparently Duncan Fletcher, his role in that team had been reduced to just being, like, you know, someone who would go and inform the players, like, who was dropped and who was not dropped. So that really affected Dhoni, considering how highly in the high regard he held Duncan Fletcher in. And you're so right. I mean, the kind of guys that functioned with him and worked perfectly were Gary Kirsten, Fleming and Fletcher, because they were strong characters. They would speak when they had to speak. But they could also let Dhoni run the ship the way he wanted to when, like, you know, when they knew that he was in command. Like, even in that CSK setup, I've heard coaches talk about how if you really wanted to pass on a suggestion to Dhoni, don't do it like you are giving him a suggestion. Almost do it in a way where you give him an idea and say that, what do you think about this, MS? Because if you said something, go and do this, he would do the exact opposite if he believed very strongly about that, like giving Muralidharan, not getting him to bowl in the power play, for example. But with the media, I mean, after the 2011 World Cup, what happened was, because of all the bashing that he took and everybody took, he just built this wall between the team and the media once he became captain. And that wall, as Jared will tell you, has just gone taller and taller. And it's become an us versus them battle ever since. And, like, you know, that I think will never go away, because he developed such a strong distrust with the media that he just shut us out. But in a way, he changed the way we had to function, because no longer were there any sources inside the dressing room. Like, we had to find new people, new ways of getting information from the Indian camp and the Indian dressing room, because Dhoni literally felt that we had no place in that scenario. He rarely did press conferences, and even when he did, he would do it when the team lost. And even when he did, he would give you nothing away. I'm sure Jared's attended many of those where you sit there for half an hour and he goes individuals this and individuals that, but you get nothing out of it.
Mostly he talked about processes, didn't he?
Yeah, he loved them. Like, yeah, or he would have these crazy...
eight straight Indian losses, and he just kept talking about processes. It was incredible. You have to respect his ability to do that. But Barrett, thank you very much for coming on. You can buy Barrett's book, The Dhoni Touch, or you can follow him on Twitter. He's got a ridiculous Twitter handle. I won't say it out loud.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for having me on. Cheers, and Barrett. Yeah, go buy the book. Cheers, Steve. Thank you.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with myself, Jared Kimber, and Ashes winner Steve Harmison. Coming up next, we'll discuss the impact that MS Dhoni had on the IPL and Indian players with former Rajasthan Royals batsman Abhishek Jhunjhunwala.
Peggy Bowles here to Dhoni. He goes again over long on, two in a row. Here we go.
Dhoni down the pitch, over the field for six. Even a bowler of the class of Trent Bolt can do nothing when MS Dhoni's in this mood.
Short pull by Dhoni all the way.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, an MS Dhoni special with myself, Jared Kimber, and Steve Harmison. Those were just a few of the highlights from MS Dhoni's amazing career in the IPL with the Chennai Super Kings. So let's get more on this now with former Rajasthan Royals batsman Abhishek Jhunjhunwala. You're obviously of a similar age to MS Dhoni. What are some of your first memories of when he sort of came through?
Well, the first time I think I saw him was probably we were playing under-16 cricket because we came from very close. Like, I played for Bengal, he played for Bihar, so we always played the interzonal competition. So India works very differently. So first, you have to play the zonal competition. So from every zone, we have five teams. So we had the likes of Bihar, Orissa, Assam, Bengal, and Tripura. So we played a lot of under-16, under-19 cricket together. Under-16, under-19 level, yes, we knew that he can come and smash the ball. But nobody ever thought that he's going to go out there and achieve what he did eventually. So he could always come and hit big sixes, but the consistency wasn't there. But as he grew up, once he started playing first-class cricket, he was a lot more consistent. And then, obviously, once he started playing India A and India, he turned things around very, very quickly.
And Abhi, was it the leadership qualities there at an early age with MS, or was it something you think he grew into as his life evolved, sort of looking at military stuff and things like that? But was he always a natural-born leader in that 15, 16, 17 age groups?
I think, yeah, you could say that. Whenever you saw him, he was somebody who was supremely confident in everything he did, and his leadership quality were always there. But that would come out so well eventually. No one thought that is going to be that good later on. But yeah, you could see that he was always a very confident guy.
And what made him stand out from other Indian cricketers? Because, I mean, he's obviously not, you know, the generation before him, they're all quite different to him. So what was it, do you think, that made Dhoni so much different than those guys?
I think he was always somebody who was very carefree, not careless, but carefree. He's always had that attitude that I'm going to give it my best. If it works out, it's fine. If it doesn't, I'll do something else. So I think that helped him a lot because he didn't take anything too seriously in life. But he was always aware of what was going on and what he needs to do. But at the same time, he was quite relaxed about everything. I think that made a huge difference where he didn't put himself under a lot of pressure, which generally all the sportsmen do. If you want to play professional cricket, a lot of sportsmen, like even I put myself under a lot of pressure of performance and all that. And I think MS handled it better than most of the guys.
And the MS, the person, you know, you didn't really get too much of MS, the person. He wasn't, you know, forthcoming with the media. You know, you didn't see him out and about in sort of lavish parties or anything like that. What was the MS, the person like? Because he seemed to have a close group of friends and didn't really let the outside world in.
Yeah, he's always been somebody who's been quite close. He's been phenomenal with his teammates. Whichever team he has played for, Chennai, he's been amazing for the boys, whoever has been in part of that squad, because I've spoken to a lot of guys and I've been in the tournament for 4 years. So you always knew that he's always very approachable for his teammates. But when it comes to his close circle, I think that's very, very, it's very hard to get in. And the best part about MS is that he's still friends with all the people he was friends with when he was 16 and 17. And his core group is still the same. He hasn't changed at all, even after being the most successful captain for India or even like one of the most successful in the world. His core group, he has kept it exactly the way it is. So, yeah, I think that way we don't see him coming out too much in the media, too much on even in social media. You hardly see his presence on social media where others are there all the time. I think that's what MS is.
What about his impact on Indian cricketers? We know that it came from Ranchi, and you know, before that it wasn't as obvious that cricketers were going to come from the smaller regional towns as they did have. So it seems like he sort of unlocked something that has changed Indian cricket in a way.
I think obviously he let all the small town kids who are growing up in India, now they're all dreaming that yes, even if you are from the smallest town in India, we can still go out there and play for India and achieve greater things. I think he's allowed people to have that dream, which earlier you would only see boys from the big towns like Mumbai, Calcutta, Delhi would always go and play for India. You hardly saw anybody coming from such a small town. And with Ravindra Jadeja, even he comes from a very small town in Gujarat. So a couple of guys who have come from nowhere and came into the scene and did amazingly well for India has just given hope and dream to kids who are born in smaller towns, and I think which is great for Indian cricket. And that's why we've seen so much talent coming through these small towns in the last 4 or 5 years.
And we talked about, you know, the cricketer of MS, the person. And what do you think is going to happen to MS next? Is he going to stay in the game, or will he go into the sort of, you know, the Bollywood style? I know he's got production company and things like that, but is there an MS that wants to stay in the game, or do you think he's had his cricketing days, he's going to move to a new venture?
I think he's somebody, once he stops playing cricket, we wouldn't see a lot of MS in the cricketing world. That's my personal opinion. I might be incorrect, but he's somebody who will try and go out there and do something completely different. What I know of him and whatever I think he would. Like, he's somebody who's, yeah, he's done this, that part of me is over, now I'm going to try something completely different. And I don't think Bollywood will be his way, because I don't think, yeah, he's going to go there, but yeah, he might surprise people by doing something completely different.
You're a player and, you know, a peer of his, but you must have a favourite MS Dhoni memory.
The favourite MS Dhoni memory, I think it has to be one of those, it has to be 2011 World Cup. Obviously, that was something which we all wanted, to win a World Cup. But I think where he changed Indian cricket was 2007 T20 World Cup. Because it was a format which nobody knew. Nobody knew how to play that format. And for him to get such a young side, a lot of newcomers, and to go out there and then win the tournament, I think that would have been a game changer for Indian cricket and for MS and a lot of us as well.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. That was Abhishek Jhunjhunwala, former IPL batsman, talking about MS Dhoni there. Thank you very much, Abhishek.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Abby.
I mean, MS Dhoni, I think, for cricket fans, we're going to think about him as this, you know, person who would time things beautifully. I think Bharat's article about him is, you know, the timing of MS Dhoni. He was always almost perfectly placed. But I think that if you widen it a little bit and look at his impact on global cricket, he's made such a big change to the way the sport is. I think T20 cricket would have been big without MS Dhoni, but because of India winning that 07 World T20, which he obviously played a huge role in, that I think took T20 to a whole nother level very quickly. And then the IPL on the back of that. And again, MS Dhoni has to play a big part of that. So it's not that he's just allowed for young Indian kids from, you know, rural areas to dream of playing for India. It's also that with the IPL and T20 cricket getting so big, we now have Afghanistani leg spinners, Nepalese leg spinners, you know, USA quick bowlers, all these different players coming around. I mean, he really has had a huge impact on the sort of the global nature of world cricket.
Yeah, he has been that sort of trailblazer that, you know, everybody seems to have wanted to go with. You know, you talk about characters of the game and the way the game has evolved and moved. And a lot of it, is down to individuals. Some element of it is luck and being in the right place at the right time. Like, for instance, the 2011 World Cup, when they win that. Arguably, I'm not sure what you think, Jared, but I thought 50-over cricket was in jeopardy before that. Mm. I thought that might have been the end of... Because the IPL had gone so well, first couple of years, I thought that 2011 World Cup could possibly have been the end of the world of 50-over cricket, and just amalgamate, just all sort of go into sort of 2020, but with India winning. And let's not get away from the fact that India's where the heart of global cricket's at. It's where the money's at. It's where all the players want to play. Intensity-wise, it's a ridiculous place to go and visit and play as an international cricketer, whether you're playing home or away. And some of these elements have largely been down to the leadership of MS Dhoni. I'm intrigued to see where he goes next, to be honest. I'm not sure. You look at big market leaders, big world leaders that have been in the game of cricket. And some of them have gone into politics. Some of them have gone into the glitz and the fame of going on the sort of Bollywood stage out in India, because obviously that's just as just as intense and just as financially rewarding. But MS doesn't strike me as somebody who will stay in as an administrator like Ganguly, or I wouldn't surprise me if you see sort of the charitable element of MS Dhoni going to help people around the world. That wouldn't surprise me at all, because I can't see him staying in the public eye as a global entertainment brand. So I'm intrigued to see what happens next. I'm sure he'll play a little bit more for Chennai, but he is somebody who has left his mark not only on individuals in the game, but actually the game itself. And very few people, I think, in the history of the game has done that. And I think MS Dhoni is definitely one of the the top of the list. Cricket's going to loss, but it's a huge congratulations on a wonderful, wonderful career.
Great stuff, Harmy. My thanks to Steve Harmison for joining me over the last hour. You've been listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2. If you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the Following On feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast, Spotify, and now on the free TalkSport app.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.